Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Jim Callis. I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download on iTunes or visiting us here at baseballamerica.com. I want to remind you that every Baseball America podcast is brought to you by MLB Network. Jim, of course, was part of MLB Network's coverage of the 2010 draft. Jim, we don't count 2010 draft players into our midseason update, our official midseason prospect update rankings. We also don't count anybody who's in the major leagues, and that always makes our midseason prospect update a real challenge. And we're going to talk about our midseason prospect update on this podcast. We'll also preview the Futures game on Sunday, where Jim is the official scorer, and I'm in the dugout for the U.S. team, interviewing players both for Baseball America but also for XM Radio. So it's a big time of year for us, Jim. It always seems like it's a big time of year. But do we ever have a small time of year?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it used to be. I felt like kind of after the Futures game it would slid out a little bit, but not really because we all have best tools lists we're working on. And
yeah.
Then in my case, you know, I did start doing Kid Cod League Top 30, and you know, you've got 8,000 summer leagues you're tracking. And, and the signing deadline is really, you know, created. It's very similar to the frenzy in the 3 or 4 days before the draft. And it's even better now, John, because once again we have the signing deadline. Would naturally, if it was August 15th, would be on the weekend.
That's right.
So it gets pushed forward to Monday, so I get a whole weekend again, just like last year, of making phone calls and trying to figure out what's going on. But so now I think we're kind of like baseball. Outside of maybe like a week after, like between Christmas and New Year's, it seems like there's nothing going on. But other than that, you know, in January we just finished prospect handbook, but it's early draft preview time. So
I was about to say, thank goodness they moved the college baseball season back, because it used to be that week after Christmas was when we worked on the college preview issue. I mean, that was there would be no downtime if the college baseball season hadn't moved back. But that said, I just spent 20 minutes on the phone with a reporter of the LA Times, where she asked me two questions about, you know, where the talent comes from, and I talked for like 20 minutes because I was excited about that topic. So it's very strange. I complain, but and yet I really love what we do, and I love the way that we do it as far as our process. And our midseason update process was a time-consuming one for me, but a fun one for me as well. And I wound up talking to 7 people who've done a lot of pro coverage, 3 or 4 of them being guys who I just knew, scouts that I know who were doing pro coverage, and 3 or 4 of them being guys who take more of a national view. And I was able to meld all that together and merge all that together. I guess it was actually 8 people. So that's fun. That's fun to talk to people in the know and to find out more about prospects. And one thing we, you know, I've talked about, I think, a little bit, Jim, we talked about it coming into the year, that it didn't seem like our top 100 was maybe as deep as other past years have been. And now that you've graduated Jason Hayward and Steven Strasburg of the major leagues, and even guys like Mike Leake, who was like in the 70s on our preseason top 100, or Ike Davis, you know, who was in the 60s. And the talent has thinned out with all those graduations. And right now, really this time of year is actually like the ebb. This is the least amount of talent for us to consider. This is the time of year you'd consider the least amount of talent, because we're not counting recently drafted players. And by July, a lot of guys have already been promoted to the big league. So it really makes it a difficult time of year to do this, and yet it's a good time to do it because it's in the midway point, the all-star break, all that stuff.
No, you're right. It is difficult. I mean, you can't count the draft guys because you really don't know who's going to sign. I mean, it would be silly to throw. I mean, I think Bryce Harper will sign. I think most of the top guys will sign. But it would be silly. You know, it would have been like throwing Garrett Cole on there if we had been inclined to do that a couple of years ago, or Aaron Crow, or last year, you know, maybe Matt Burke.
Great point.
And, you know, then they don't sign, so the list is kind of silly. And it's tough. I mean, it's always this time of year, I always feel like I know the least about prospects, because, like you said, so many guys have been promoted to the big leagues. So, you know, I know Jason Hayward and Steven Strasburg and those guys pretty well, but they don't count anymore. And I've been so draft intensive, and then off of the College World Series, that, you know, then we start putting this top 25 list together with all the guys who no longer qualify, and you're like, wow, are these guys really that good of a prospect? Or, you know, I'll get asked, you know, hey, you know, so-and-so a top 100 prospect, and I always feel bad, but, I mean, I don't keep a running top 100. It's hard to say with any kind of precision, yeah, you know, Ethan Martin's a number 62 prospect in baseball right now.
Right.
You know, and then, too, you know, if you went back and looked, I mean, from what we did a year ago at midseason and what happens by the end of the season, so much more happens, and then all the draft guys sign, that the list winds up looking totally different at the end of the year. So it's this list always winds up being a little bit strange to me, looking at the guys on it, and it just seems like almost all of them, I'm thinking, wow, you know, that guy seems really high.
That's right.
You got to put 25 guys on there, so it's kind of like, I guess, what we say about the draft a lot of times, when scouts will be like, oh, there just really aren't 30 first-round picks out there this year. I don't see 30 guys with that kind of talent, but, you know, by the time the draft's done, there are 30 first-round picks, or in this case, there were 32 this year.
That's right, and now that's for sure that kind of thing that does happen with our midseason update, for sure. And you know, it's a community kind of effort. But last year's midseason update, you know, we had Jason Hayward number one, that actually held in, and Mike Stanton was number two, and that actually held in. And this year, at this time last year, Dominic Brown had just kind of started to break in. He was really having his breakout season last year. We had him 17 in last year's prospect update, with Desmond Jennings actually being 18, and Mike Trout was in high school. And those are our top three guys. This year, I wound up going, because I ended up having the final say on the list, wound up going with Brown, then Trout, then Desmond Jennings. But I think in terms of the minor league season, right now, I think it's hard to say there are bigger stories in the minor leagues than Dominic Brown and Mike Trout. Dominic Brown, who's already surpassed, I mean, the guy's been the Phillies' number one prospect the last 2 years. So, you know, he's been a fairly high-profile guy here for 2 years now. And you know, he already surpassed his career high in home runs just in the first half at AA Reading. And now he's off to a tremendous start at AAA with Lehigh Valley. I was fortunate enough to see one of his first games when he went to AAA. His AAA debut, he came to Durham, and they played a four-game set against the Bulls in one of those games we broadcast on MLB Network. So I think a lot of people got a chance to see it. But, you know, Jim, a couple years ago, we kind of took a little bit of a leap with Dominic Brown as our Phillies' number one prospect. And really the great thing about it from our standpoint is that he's done nothing but impress, it seems like, since then, and he keeps getting a little bit better. He still seems like there's some raw parts to his game. But I think if not for that you know, regrettable, I would say, Raul Ibanez contract the Phillies handed out prior to the 2009 season, he might already be in the big leagues and might already be a part of them chasing a third straight pennant.
No, you're right. I mean, I keep waiting for him to call him up, too, and then they just don't have, you know, room unless you're willing to eat Ibanez's salary. But, you know, I was looking at this, John, and I think another reason it's kind of thin, when it just kind of crystallized a little bit for me when you mentioned Hayward and Stanton. It's usually, it seems like about 2 years after a draft, the guys really start to hit their stride in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
And we knew at the time that the 2008 draft was supposed to be a good draft. And you go back and you look, and Pedro Alvarez, the number two pick, Brian Mattis, the number four pick, Buster Posey's the fifth pick, Gordon Beckham's the eighth pick, Jason Castro's the tenth pick, Justin Smoke's the 11th pick. All those guys are off the board for us.
Correct.
Because they're in the big leagues. Ike Davis was the 18th pick. Andrew Cashner was the 19th pick. Ryan Perry, you know, went up last year. He was the 21st pick.
Yeah.
You know, just so many of those guys shot to the big leagues so quickly that I almost think sometimes, and maybe this happened in 2005, which was, I think, the last draft of 408 that was considered particularly deep.
Right.
Then when you have a really strong draft, the guys get to the big leagues quicker, and then they leave a little bit of a void in the minor leagues. And I think that's what we're having this year.
And that's a great point. That, like you said, it just kind of really crystallized a little bit for me. And then one other reason that maybe the draft looks a little bit, or the minors look a little shallow. And the specific quote I got from two guys, I used one guy's quote, but that it's position players in particular who seem a little bit disappointing. And even that surprised me, because to me, the pitching, who's the top pitching prospect, that's really, that's a shallow pool.
Well, I'm with you, because I was looking at your list, and we sort of, I was going to bring that up to you. I mean, you were the point man on this list, and you know, it's funny, you know, the top pitcher you have on the list is Jeremy Hellickson, and like my gut says, Jeremy Hellickson, really the top pitching prospect in the entire minor leagues. But it's like, who else are you going to take? I mean, the highest ceiling is probably Julio Teheran, but he's only pitched a little bit in high class A.
Right.
You know, Martin Perez, you know, I would be inclined to take over both of them, but he's getting knocked around some in double A. You know, Zach Britton, I like some. You know, Michael Pineda's a guy who shot up the charts. You know, Aroldis Chapman, I'll paraphrase Denny Green. Aroldis Chapman is who I thought he was and who I think you thought he was, where the guy can light up a gun, but he's kind of raw.
That's right.
But he's not Strasburg. You know, Simone Castro, Mike Montgomery is not, you know, not, you know, a little injured right now. Tyler Matzik really hasn't been cut loose yet. He's only pitched a handful of innings. I mean,
right.
That's really, I mean, a year ago, no question, you know, who's the top pitch? Who will be a top pitching prospect? It would have been Strasburg if he'd signed right out of the draft.
No doubt.
Coming into the season, it was no question. It was Steven Strasburg. But now, I just really, to me, that's one of the developing stories, I think, for the second half of the season is who will be the top pitching prospect? Because I just don't think there's anybody who's clear-cut. It's a big muddled mess.
Yeah, it was kind of the same thing was actually true last year. I think the pitchers who show any ability just don't stick around in the minor leagues very often. And the ones who do have been Rays. You know, the Rays have kept their guys in AAA for a while. So that's how you know, last year Wade Davis was 16th on our list. And, you know, Jeff Niemann had 2 years in AAA. And now Jeremy Hellickson's on his second year in AAA. And I think I like Hellickson a little bit better than you do. I think he's a legit, the floor is number three starter and the ceiling is number two. And I think he's got a good chance to be a number two starter. And maybe, in the words of some of our college listeners, I'm a little biased. Because I really do, I see him a lot at AAA Durham. I've talked to the guy. You know, I've seen his development, just the additions that he's made to his repertoire from last year to this year. And that is one common theme of some of the guys who are toward the top of our list. You know, on this list last year, Jesus Montero was number three. Jesus Montero was the highest ranked player on our top 100 who was still eligible for this midseason top 25. But, you know, like you mentioned with Martin Perez, it doesn't mean that we are going to go so much on what have you done for me lately. But at the same time, if you're doing something right now, I do think you have to ding those guys a little bit. If Martin Perez were pitching, if he had a 4.30 ERA, I think, you know, or if his ratio is a little bit better in terms of the hits that he's allowed and his walks per nine innings, I think I'd be a little bit more, I would have not had him as the third pitching prospect. He probably would have been second or first.
Stock in the numbers.
And Montero's the same way.
It's hard to say a guy with a 5.5 ERA is the best pitching prospect in the minor leagues.
That's all, yeah. And and Montero's 20. I guess I'll be 21 later this year. But I do think we had some pretty good scouting reports on this guy this year that said, look, the defense, you know, at the end of last year, you had some guys saying, you know, he got better in double A. Maybe he can stay behind the plate a little bit. We're not hearing that at all this year. And, you know, I think he's going to catch better when he hits better. And AAA, contrary to what Brian Sabian says, AAA is hard.
You know? Yeah, I've heard this, you know, a lot of times. I mean, you know, everybody says that making the jump to AA is the toughest, but AAA, I think, you're getting pitchers whose command is better. It's a different animal. He's still pretty young, and I'm with you. I mean, I've never really thought he was going to be a long-term catcher. You know, I didn't think that was much of a chance to really have that happen. But I still believe in the bat. I mean, we had too many guys throwing 70s or 75s on him when we were doing best tools for the top 100 for both the bat and the power. And, you know, he's young. I still think if I'm the Yankees, I still, you know, and they're trying, obviously. I'd like to at least get the receiving polished up, and maybe he's a poor man to Mike Piazza, and I just eat the defense and take the bat early on and until I, you know, find a catcher that I'm going to sign away from another team. But I'm still not too worried of him. But you're right, I mean, that's a tough one, too. I mean, he's not having a year. I would have thought, I think I said this at the beginning of the year, people ask, oh, who's going to be my league player of the year? He was a prime candidate just because I thought he was one guy who'd spend most of the year, if not all the year, in the minors and have a huge year.
No doubt. I think if we had to pick a minor league player of the year right now, that winner would be Mike Trout, the Angels outfielder, drafted 25th overall last year, Jim. You were there at the draft in Secaucus at MLB Network Studios. Mike Trout from Jersey drove up. I mean, he was the only player there, which I think was really neat that he was there. I think we all liked Mike Trout, and I remember Nathan Rohde especially, our high school writer, was really on Mike Trout last year. We did a feature on him in the high school section, and we wrote about how difficult it was to scout him because the weather in New Jersey last year was just brutal in terms of a lot of rain. But, I think that contributed to him falling to 25th in the draft. But I'm still – so I think we liked him better than 25th, and we really were thinking that maybe he should have been their number one prospect coming into the year. We erred on the side of the guys who were higher up the ladder, Hank Conger, who's also going to the Futures game. We'll talk about that later. But boy, Mike Trout, I think, has just been better than anybody could have expected. Even after the buzz that he created last year in the Arizona League and in the Instructional League, this guy, is just killing it. You just don't see teenagers with 530 slugging percentages in the Midwest League. He's hitting 360. He's second in the minor leagues in stolen bases. He's a legit 80 runner. There really doesn't seem like there's a big negative right now for Mike Trout. Everything is up.
No, you're right. I mean, I think that, you know, it's harder to get a feel for those Northeast guys and how much they can hit exactly, because you don't get to see him much and not against a lot of good competition. And, you know, he exceeded, you know, I think we had him ranked about 20th going into the draft. He didn't go that much lower than where we thought he would go.
Right.
But, you know, he came in, he tore up the Arizona League. And, you know, I mean, going to Midwest League this year, if you told me he'd be hitting 262, you know, and had a 347 on base percentage instead of 362 and 447, I would have said, you know, that's a real solid year for a guy who won't even be 19 until August and, you know, doesn't come from a warm weather state where he's played a lot of good competition. And geez, I mean, he's, you mean, you hit the nail on the head. I don't know what else to say other than this guy's even better than we all thought. And, I mean, I'll admit, I mean, this is when we were doing the MLB draft show last year, Frank Marcos from Major League Scouting Bureau was part of it. And then, you know, obviously we knew Strasburg was the top guy in the draft. And then they did this little segment at the beginning of the draft show where Frank talked about the rest of his top five. And I know Ackley was in there, Dustin Ackley was in there, and I can't remember who the other guys were, but the fifth guy was Mike Trout. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, look, Mike Trout's good, but come on, that's a bit much. One of the top five players in the draft. And when I saw Frank this year at the draft show, I said, hey, you were right on Mike Trout. That, you know, if, maybe Frank's the one guy who thought he was this good, but, you know, there's nothing not to like about that guy. I mean, he's going to have power, too. I mean, he's, what, about 6'1", 200? There's going to be power to come down the road, too.
Yeah, there's some real strength there.
He's a real exciting guy.
The other player, now, you know, he was in our top 100, but the other player who has, like, the most buzz, it seems like, for this draft, or for this top two, mid-season update, I'm sorry, was Michael Pineda, right-handed with the Mariners. And I was talking to one evaluator for this list, and he said, yeah, Pineda is kind of a guy who came out of nowhere. You know, I didn't have him on our internal Mariners list. And I said, well, you should have. We had him number 7 in their system, you know. And
that was with him missing most of the season with being hurt.
That's right. Yeah, he had 47 innings last year. And if you read Matt Eddy's scouting report, you know, Matt basically, you know, really was all over it. Just said that his velocity was starting to come back in the Cal League playoffs. And the only issue was the elbow. You know, there was an elbow injury last year. But he never had surgery. And he's come back super strong this year. We've had reports of his velocity up to 98. Fastball sitting in the mid-90s. A cutter was his primary breaking ball in the past, if you can call it a breaking ball. This year it's become much more of a true slider. He throws it with real power. Always had kind of a feel for a changeup and a big body guy. And Jim, I think the funny thing is that you and I both talked about, man, it's too bad the Phillies didn't get this guy in the Cliff Lee trade, because then that might have equalized things a little bit.
Yeah, and they probably didn't have much of a report on him because he missed most of the season. And, you know, 2 years ago he was in the Midwest League, and I always do our Midwest League prospects list, and he had a great year. I think he had an ERA under 2, but he didn't quite make the top 20 in that league because of what you said. I mean, he showed some velocity, but, you know, was more of a cutter than really a true breaking ball. Guys didn't love the delivery a lot, and maybe that led to some of the elbow problems last year. And then they liked the arm, but it was more like, okay, you know, this guy is a, you know, probably reliever in the long run. And, you know, when you're doing a top 20 in the league that has 14 teams, relievers usually, you know, guys who's projected as relievers just not going to make top 20.
Right.
You have too many players, too many teams, but he just keep getting better and better. And, you know, again, I mean, that was one of the things that jumped out at me, too. I mean, I think you wound up putting him at number 11 overall on the top 25. And, but, I mean, in terms of the stuff, the stuff's exciting. And not only that, I mean, he's already jumped up to AAA, too. It's not like this guy's tearing up, you know, gone back to the Cal League after being hurt there last year. This guy's getting it done in the upper minors.
Yeah, that was a big separating factor for me, was that he is doing it at the upper minors. He did it so well at AA. We'll wrap up this section with a guy who's not necessarily getting it done in the upper minors, one of his former teammates, Dustin Ackley, who's still on this list. He's number 7. And I think people know how strongly we feel about Dustin Ackley, that we really, you know, like him as a prospect. He had a brutal month of April. I mean, just an awful month of April. About as bad as it could have gone for the number 2 pick in last year's draft. But he has rallied. He's got an on-base percentage, close to, if not over, 380 right now. I know I was looking at his box score just from last night, and it was 0-for-2 with two walks. You know, so he keeps on walking. You know, I'd say 383 right now, 54 walks, 41 strikeouts. Not hitting for a lot of power. The on-base is higher than his slugging, only slugging 375. But, Jim, I guess I wrote him up as a stock-down guy, but just I wrote that it's all relative because, you know, Dusty really, you know, I think expectations were extremely high. And they were even higher, really, after we did the best tools thing we did in the spring for the, with the top 100. Has his start of his first pro season dampened your enthusiasm for him, maybe a smidge? Or are you really not too worried about it? Because it's really a pretty – the Mariners have thrown an awful lot at him.
I'm really not worried about it too much. I just think it's a small sample size. He's been a lot better recently. I think it's awful lot to ask of a guy – even a guy who people considered, you know, maybe the best, you know, minor league hitter or best college hitter since Robin Ventura to go straight to Double-A. And, oh, by the way, instead of playing first base, which is probably the easiest position, we'd like you to play second base. I mean, he's got the athleticism to do it. I just think that's an awful lot on his plate. And, in fact, I mean, he really reminds me of Ventura. I mean, guys were, you know, not only throwing that out there as he's the best college hitter since Ventura, but my first year at Baseball America was 1989, and you know, I had some frame of reference. This is prospects when I came in. But, you know, I heard, you know, Robin Ventura and the 58-game hitting streak. And, mm-hmm. You know, unbelievable bat and this and that. And I don't know if people remember. I mean, Robin Ventura went straight to Double-A, too. Stayed at third base, which was his position in Oklahoma State. And he had .278 with a .361 slugging percentage. He didn't really do a whole lot either for a guy who was supposed to be unbelievable. And that's just, I mean, that year just reminds me of what Ackley's going through now. And I, like I said, I think Ackley's had more on his plate. So it doesn't bother me. Ventura obviously bounced back fine. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Ackley wound up hitting close to 300 by the time the season's over, you know, with an on-base percentage in the fours. And I still think the bat's going to play and play very well. Not sure he's a second baseman.
Right.
But I was never sure that was – I don't think anybody, even the Mariners, thought that was a lock that he'd be able to play there in the long term.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he has remained there. But that's the thing to me, Double-A – and moving him, you're not just switching positions, you're moving him out of the middle of the infield. That's a big deal. There's a lot of responsibilities beyond just catching the ball when it's hit to you for a second baseman to learn. If you never played that position, I think there's a lot, you know, a lot that Dustin Ackley had to learn. We have a couple of questions at our Facebook page. You can always send us questions for podcasts at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Dean Fox asks, how would you evaluate Mike Minor's progress? When's the earliest you see him in Atlanta? I think you had an SBA question about this, Jim. But I know one of the things that I gathered about Mike Minor in this process, he just missed the 25 for me. But Mike Minor's stuff is better than it was last year at Vanderbilt. He's actually added velocity as a pro. And the scouting report that I'm pretty sure I wrote last year, which was that there were some scouts who thought that him adding a curveball as a junior degraded all his stuff because it raised his arm slot ever so slightly. And that his fastball was less crisp, his slider was worse, and even his changeup was worse because they were all coming out of a slightly higher slot than his natural slot because he wanted to stay on top of that curveball. I had two sources tell me that their reports on Mike Minor this year are that he's not throwing the curveball. It was fastball, slider, change. And just like this scout predicted last year when I did Tennessee in the draft, his stuff is crisper and better. The velocity is better, I think, than maybe anyone expected. He's touched a lot of 96s, according to people we've talked to. The slider's better. It's a solid average pitch, and the changeup is plus. So this is a guy with a plus fastball, a plus changeup, an average slider, command, some moxie. The result is, in his first pro season, he's at AAA, and he's among the minor league leaders in strikeouts. So I'm not even sure that I'm even with you anymore that saying that he shouldn't have been the number 7 pick. I just think he's, you know, he's right where he's back to where he was in the summer of 2008 when he was our summer college player of the year and we thought he was going to be in the first 10 picks.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely taken a step forward. The interesting thing, too, is his command, which has been a strong suit, has not been as sharp as sharp this year. But I still give him a lot of credit. He's going to get to the big leagues quick. I don't think he's one of the top 7 players from 2009 draft when all is said and done. But on the same token, if you're taking a guy you have to sign for slot and have to, sign for a certain amount, you could have done a lot worse than take Mike Minor.
Yeah, he's had a tremendous year. I think really all three of the you know, you had Strasburg last year, and then you had, like, okay, who's the next best college pitcher? And that group, the candidates in that group were Kyle Gibson, Mike Minor, Alex White, and Mike Leake. Obviously, Mike Leake has garnered the most attention and deserves all the credit in the world for jumping straight to the big leagues. But Kyle Gibson, I think, was the guy that we ranked the highest out of those pitchers last year after Strasburg. He's had a tremendous year. He's had a great start the other day at Double-A in New Britain. Alex White's at Double-A, fastball up to 95 mile an hour. He just missed this list. His slider is still below average, really kind of gives me pause, but that splitter has still been a wipeout pitch for him. He's really handling left-handed hitters very well. And so all those guys are really, that college pitching class was a thinner, kind of a, on the thin side last year, but that top group of college pitchers have all gotten their pro careers off to very, very good starts, and obviously Strasburg at the top of that. The other question we had, Jim, was Oscar Schutt, who I believe is an agent, wants to ask, what's the long-term projection for Brian Morris? Brian Morris, originally drafted by the Dodgers, now traded to the was traded to the Pirates and the Pirates organization. He's actually on the Futures game as a replacement. What's your take on Brian Morris?
I've always liked him. I mean, with Morris, the question is just, can he stay healthy? I mean, he's always had a good arm and a good curveball. It's just been a matter of staying healthy. I mean, even after the Pirates got him, I think he came down with, I want to say, bicep tendonitis and then a foot injury. And I mean, he just has not stayed healthy. And if he can stay healthy, I mean, I think he's got as much upside as just about any of the pitchers in their system.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I mean, I always associate him with, you know, the 2004, I guess it was, high school draft class in the Southeast. It was either 04 or 05, where the top three high school guys in that region were him, Cody Satterwhite, and Chaz Rowe. And I remember arguing with you and Alan Simpson about those guys, and I was a Brian Morris guy. I really didn't like Cody Satterwhite at all. I've never liked Cody Satterwhite. No offense, Cody. It's nothing personal, but I just don't like you as a player.
Yeah,
this time it is personal. And then I think Alan Simpson might have been a Chaz Rowe guy who's never quite panned out with the Rockies but was a second-round pick. But none of those guys, three high school pitchers, if one of them gets to the big leagues, it might even be an upset by now. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Jim. Brian Morris, as we said, is a futures gamer. Let's touch on the futures game here, Jim, before we wrap up the podcast. It's the 12th, I guess, futures game. 1999 was the first futures game back in Fenway Park. Have you been to, how many futures games have you been to?
Well, I was not with Baseball America in 1999.
Right.
That was during my sojourn at Stats Inc., so I missed that one. And in 2001, my wife was pregnant with our fourth child, and I think having me go to the College World Series just about killed her, being pregnant with our three kids, so I did not go to that one in Seattle. And I think I missed 2008 in Yankee Stadium, so I think I have missed.
Oh, yeah, you weren't there.
And then to eight.
I forgot you weren't there at Yankee Stadium. We would have had to probably go three to the hotel room in New York for that one, too. That would have been tremendous because that hotel room was basically the size of a closet.
But, I've been rooting for no rain delay this year because last year that was just brutal. However long that rain delay was, it just took forever.
I forgot about that because during the rain delay, I actually had a great interview, as Jim Rome would say, with Brett Wallace, where I initially mocked him for his fake fight at Arizona State with Ike Davis, and he rolled his eyes at me, and then I was laughing as I said it, and then he got in on the joke, and I just think it's funny that now Brett Wallace, and that guy since that game, he was the home representative, so he was on the cover of our magazine as the Cardinals prospect at the Futures game, played in St. Louis. He was traded to Oakland, which I think he was going to be very excited about because he's a Northern California guy. And I think he was really would have loved to have played for the A's. Then he was immediately traded again to the Blue Jays. And now with the Blue Jays, he plays first base at Triple-A. And now he's blocking, although I don't know that he's really blocking David Cooper because David Cooper's having a terrible year. But he's blocking David Cooper. And those guys were high school teammates on that NorCal travel ball team that also included James Darnell and Brandon Crawford. So just some of these attachments, when you mentioned that, so that I think interviewing Brett Wallace in the dugout. So we both have really, I think, neat roles with the Futures game, with me in the dugout and you being the official scorer. And, it's one of my favorite events of the year. One of the things that I'm looking forward to is, I guess, who's a player that you're really looking forward to seeing in this year's Futures game? I mean, I know last year we were all really looking forward to Hayward and Stanton, and for whatever reason, they never played in the game at the same time, which was vexing.
I mean, that alone, the lineup, it was like, let's not showcase these guys at all. So.
Yeah, that was vexing. But who's a player that you want to see the most? Is Teron on that short list for you?
Yeah, I think the three guys I'm most interested in are guys who haven't advanced that far, so you just haven't seen a lot of them. Are one, Trout, you know, who we talked about.
Yep.
Two, Julio Teheran, who, you know, seems like he's just bursting onto the scene, but really, I mean, he was signed, what, 2-3 years ago, so we've been hearing about this guy for a while. Now he's finally fully healthy and really getting going. I mean, he was a 2007 signee.
Right.
And then the third guy would probably be Hak-Ju Lee of the Cubs. Again, an international guy who was signed a couple years ago, who spent last year in short season ball, and this year is having a real nice year in the Midwest League. Those are probably the three guys I'd like to see the most.
I was not expecting you to mention the muscular ref Hak-Ju Lee out there. That was a name I wasn't looking for out of you. So that's a good one. You know, I'm very much looking forward to seeing Tanner Shepherds in this event. To me, Tanner Shepherds is just kind of I want to see him in person. I've seen him compared to Justin Verlander. I've seen him compared to Daniel Bard. You know, he clearly has an electric arm, and I put him 25th on this list. I do think relievers have enough value in today's game that they matter more as prospects, whether they throw 80 innings or not. You can't have a championship team without a championship-caliber bullpen in today's game. So those players are important, and if he's a championship-caliber closer, then I think he's one of the top 25 prospects in the game. But obviously the Rangers are trying to have him start right now. So, and that, you know, he's made 5 starts. You really can't draw a lot of conclusions out of that. But I always look for guys with big-time velocity in a game like this. I'm also really intrigued to see Zach Britton. This is a guy who, again, referencing back to our best tools that we did with the top 100, we got so much feedback. You got so much feedback on Britton's sinker, and I saw a lot of that in this exercise and wound up ranking him 10th on our midseason prospect update. So I really want to see that sinker for myself and see what he's like just up close with a left-hander with a two-seamer like that. But, you know, there's not, you know, like, I remember the first Futures game I went to was the one down in Houston where you had the BP group was like B.J. Upton, Delman Young, David Wright, I think, was in that same BP group, and then Aaron Hill. And Aaron Hill was like, oh, I don't really belong here. I think Aaron Hill's hit more home runs in a single season than any of those guys. And plus he won the MVP award that day in Houston. So Aaron Hill really did belong. But I remember that BP group, those guys were just sending balls all over whatever the field was called at that time, whether it was Enron or Minute Maid. So I'm not sure what the best BP group is going to be because you have some real speedsters. But I think Mike Trout, like you said, is a guy I really want to see. I definitely want to see Mike Moustakas take BP because his raw power sounds significant and his track record for hitting power is quite significant.
Carlos Figueroa might be a good BP guy, too. I'm still not convinced he's more than just kind of a one-trick guy. But, I mean, he's got tons of raw power, too, and you know, at least we have Dominic Brown and Brett Jackson to look at also.
Right. Yeah, the U.S. outfield is probably the position with the most tools in a good way. You've definitely got some upside players there. And Brett Jackson's a guy who's really, you know, every time I see Brett Jackson, I think about Mike Roberts, his coach from the Cape Cod League, Brian Roberts' dad, comparing him to J.D. Drew. And, you know, my BA experience started with the J.D. Drew era. You know, 1997 was my first full year here, and that was the year that Drew had the only 30-30 season in college baseball history. I don't know if you remember, Jim, there was a guy at Utah that year who almost matched him. Do you remember that by chance?
Nick Freitas?
No. That's Southern Utah. It was in 1997. I forget the guy's name. It's like Casey Child or something like that. He had 31 home runs and 27 steals.
Okay, yeah, that one, I don't know if I ever knew that one.
Well. Anyway, that guy. That's the only 30-30 season. So to me, J.D. Drew, and obviously his draft saga, those next two drafts. So I always have J.D. Drew on like a upper level of prospect in my own head, even though his major league career hasn't quite worked out like that. So when I have someone compared to J.D. Drew, that's always a very flattering comparison. So, and then Brett Jackson's really kind of made good on those this year. He's had a tremendous season. So. I think we're looking forward to the Futures game. How much do you really draw from the Futures game, Jim, just from seeing the players with your eyes and being able to I mean, does it inform the way you view those players or rate those players in any way?
Not really, because, I mean, the pitchers you only get to see for one inning, and they know it. They're throwing for the gun in a lot of cases. So you're not really seeing, like, what any of the starting pitchers are really going to pitch at over the course of a game. I mean, I think the only thing that jumps out, and again, there aren't really anything, there's nobody jumps to mind that comes as an example of this. I mean, if a guy had, like, an odd-looking arm action or swing, that might jump out at you a little bit, but you just don't get to see enough of them in action, really. I mean, last year with Hayward and Stanton,
right,
you saw, like, two swings. Now, I mean, I will admit last year I thought Chris Carter looked a little bit stiff to me, but then I've had any number of pro scouts who know what they're doing more than I do tell me how much they like Chris Carter, so what do I know? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, and you know, a couple years ago, you say this, I say the same thing. Like, Henry Rodriguez was kind of the buzz of that Futures game at Yankee Stadium because he hit 100 miles an hour a couple times, but he also fell down on the mound. And I remember thinking, that can't be good. You know, that can't be good that he fell down. And then the next year, I saw Trevor Bauer at USA College National Team fall down in mid-delivery as he was pitching to Guatemala. And I remember thinking, this Trevor Bauer guy is a clown. I mean, I can't believe this guy. But then I saw him this year and the kind of season he had and the long toss and the hoy-hoy and the javelin and all that stuff. And now I'm fully on the Trevor Bauer bandwagon. So, like you said, you can only put so much stock in our eyes and what we see. Like you said, we're not scouts. And I don't think any club ever would judge players on one look either, so especially a look as short as a Futures game. But I do think they use it. I do think that they file reports on these guys. I think it's helpful, and it basically is a quasi-showcase before the trade deadline. And at the very least, it can give you a snapshot or an idea of what a player can do. But obviously, I don't think you can really judge guys off what they do in the Futures game.
And I think you're right. I think it's more just kind of getting a look for what a guy's swing looks like or what his arm might look in infield. You know, it's a way you can get, like you said, a snapshot of 50 or so guys at once, you know, without having to go around the 20 different cities to see everybody.
I do. One thing is for sure, the clubs value it highly because we get there early, and the stands and during BP and infield are just crawling with scouts from every organization. And some organizations seem like they send like 5 or 10 guys to that event. So I think it's always stood out to me as an event that is one of the most viewed. It's scouted as heavily, it seems like, as the Cape is in the summer or like the Fall League is in Arizona every year. So, Jim, we'll see you out in Anaheim. Always entertaining to get together for that. And are you staying for the All-Star game or not?
No, I'm leaving Monday afternoon.
I'm doing the same thing. So for Jim Callis, I'm John Manuel. We might even record a podcast out in Anaheim during Futures Game weekend.
Well, I was thinking of Trains in the background, but I guess that was at the Under Armour Classic.
That was Under Armour, which was that was outstanding. That's one of my all-time favorite podcasts. So we'll talk to you from the Futures Game. For Jim Callis, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast, brought to you by MLB Network. So long, everybody.